At the dawn of time, the world was covered in flames, and demons ruled over men. It was the time of Akavasha, sorceress queen of Acheron, a kingdom of hell on earth.
Greetings and well met, travelers. You have found your way to Dragonreel, a magical journey to the realm of fantasy movies.
Welcome back to Dragonreel, the fantasy film podcast. This is episode 15, where we talk about Kull the Conqueror. I'm Chris, and by this axe, I rule. In chair number two, it's really hard to mistake her compliance for enthusiasm. It's Sharon.
But I will try my hardest to satisfy you in this podcast.
Ooh, I like it already. In chair number three.
Sorry, go ahead.
In chair number three from the House of Cornell, pure as the driven snow, it's Pete.
He's not that pure.
Thank you. That's true, and this axe isn't just for chopping wood.
What else is that axe for?
We can talk later.
Okay. In chair number four, new to the show for this episode, he should be in regal robes, not bearskin, it's Ron.
Oh no, they're off at the cleaners though. What shall I wear?
Well, you
a
could
smile.
Go there. Nothing but a smile.
Nothing but a smile.
All right.
I am chafing a little bit, but okay.
Okay.
So we saw, for this week's episode, we saw Kull the Conqueror. That is a 1997 movie starring Kevin Sorbo. And I have got to say, if you have got an hour and a half to spare in which you can watch Kull the Conqueror,
do
find
something
else.
Oh, please, like, do something
else. No, guys, Kevin Sorbo's in this movie. Don't say that about my love.
Not even Kevin Sorbo in his flagging career can save...
Oh, my God.
Kevin Sorbo probably at the height of his career, wouldn't you
say?
Yeah,
it's just after Hercules' Legendary Journeys.
So they were looking
for... They're not women. You don't understand. This was
right after Hercules and just before Testicles. Sorry.
So they were looking for things to put Kevin Sorbo in, and this, you know, came up just in time. You know,
so,
they really wanted it to, you know.
I'm sorry.
He was very believable as Kull. I mean, come on. You guys are being too harsh.
I think he was very intelligible as Kull.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think that he was very Herculean as Kull.
Yeah, I was going to say they could have named it Hercules the Conqueror.
I really had a hard time distinguishing between this character.
But that's writing, and that's producing. I'm saying.
But that's directing and acting.
Well, yeah. I still like the acting. I mean, he still looks handsome.
And
I'm blind, and I can tell.
There's a reason why that TV series was popular. You know?
Absolutely.
It actually looked like he played that the whole time. He played Hercules the whole movie.
Yeah.
You guys are really, really harsh. Oh.
True, but I realized that I have a different love for this movie, and it's because it's so bad it's funny.
Okay.
Why don't you tell us what the movie's about, Pete?
The movie is about Kull, an Atlantean barbarian who just wants to be belonged to a group of apparently only noble-blooded people who fight with flaming swords. And through Deus Ex Machina, he's made the king of Volusia, only to have his plans of liberation and democracy destroyed and undone by the resurrected queen of Acheron and her demonic plottings with the other royal brood who should have been on the throne. And I feel that it also shows the true power of the mullet.
There's definitely a lot of mullet going on here.
But to save Volusia, he will accompany people with bad haircuts and scantily clad women into cold regions in order to bring back the breath of Elka and destroy the Witch Queen of Acheron once and for all.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Ron, anything to add?
Well, I was thinking it was kind of like Cinderella at the end there.
Because they run up in a chariot with mace and pumpkins?
No, all he had to do was just give her a kiss at the end.
See, I got...
Yeah, did you see that, like, that thing he kissed at the end? That was, ugh. it was like, you know, catching a video of something, some college party that happened, and you barely remember it.
I thought it was live action manga. I thought it was live action, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
But that's
well,
just me.
It's fun stuff people do with puppets, you know.
It's true. Especially slimy on fire puppets.
There are a lot of things that could have been better about this movie, but
yes, Yes,
well,
there
yeah,
could be.
Of course. Yeah. But I actually enjoyed the scenes between Kevin Sorbo and Karina
Lombard.
Yes, Lombard, yes. I liked the acting between them. You guys know I'm a true romantic, and you know I believed the scene, especially the one where he's bathing and he asks her to bring the cards.
Ah, yes.
To his room. I like that.
Read the cards, baby. Yes. Give me a book.
I'll sleep alone tonight.
I'm just saying. For this, when was the? I mean, it's a fantasy movie. It was made in what, the 80s?
Well, it was made so. This movie was made so late in the 80s. It was made in 97.
Yeah, exactly.
What?
It was made in 1997.
Oh right. My God! Okay, I'm
I take it all back.
I take it all back. But I just okay. So we know it's a B movie. I mean, I'm sure all the actors in it know it's a B movie. But for a B movie, it's not horrible.
They just kind of went for it, you know.
So the problem that we have here is the fact that this was supposed to be the third Conan movie.
All right.
Arnie refused to do it. The reason why the king at the beginning is Sven Ole Thorsen, who appeared in the first two Conan films and many Arnie films, is because he had signed on knowing this was going to be the third Conan film. And then Arnie refused.
Third Arnold Schwarzenegger Conan
film, right. And it was going to complete that trilogy of Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer, Conan the Conqueror. And this was going to be where his crown rested upon his troubled brow.
Yeah, but he had such good makeup in his fight scene there, Sven.
Yes.
So are you saying that it was supposed to be the third Conan movie, but then they changed the whole beginning to make this other guy call the Barbarian a king?
Well, okay, a couple things about Call also.
Okay.
We're kind of combining a bunch of things here. So what happens is Arnie says no to the movie.
Okay.
So they decide to, instead of making a Conan film and try to reboot the franchise with a new actor, they decide to make it about Kull instead, who's an ancestor of Conan's.
They're both Robert E. Howard properties.
Right. And Conan exists, while Conan exists during the Hyperborean Age, Kull exists during the High Volusian Age, at which time Atlantis was still above the waters.
Okay, is there a Call book? Is that where you're getting the information?
There are Call short stories. There's no. It's like Conan. There is no novelization. All books about Call are compendiums or anthologies of short stories.
That's why in the beginning, Call introduced himself as "I am Call of Atlantis," and they go, "Ah, you are just a barbarian." In that first fight scene in the pond.
Because
I love that pond scene
of Atlantis.
Okay, I want to talk about the scene in the pond.
Okay.
Because, as a blind person, Chris was describing it to me, and I loved how they were blindfolded and fighting in water. I totally got into that because I'm thinking, I could do that. In fact, I think the next time we get together, I want to go to a pool and have everyone wear blindfolds. And then you could give me a sword, and I could whack the crap out of you guys. I'm just saying.
Do we get swords also?
Oh, yeah.
That would be fair.
But
and I
just
fall for it. My big question, though, is that are you going to go with a nobleman's weapon, which is apparently a sword with the last foot and a half on fire?
That pretty blue fire.
It was. Beautiful blue fire.
The fire, but I thought it was a neat idea. And it made sense, and I love
it. My second question is, do we have to cut our hair in mullets?
No.
Okay.
But
practically all the Dragon Guard had the power of the mullet.
But I like that I like the fact that they made something that was logical and that made sense. You know, when you're blindfolded, when you're in water, you could hear where the person was. And probably that would be something that you would train and you'd have to be pretty skilled at.
Right,
because
but you can't hear where their sword is.
Exactly.
No, but you can hear where their body is. And by moving and using your other senses, I think I could do it quite well. We should try it and then do a podcast about it.
You can also feel the heat of the sword as well.
Did anyone
else notice that Kevin Sorbo's fighting style, he used the same kill on just about everybody?
Yes.
he did that crouch and then the upward push of the sword there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is funny, because as soon as he does the crouch in the water, he puts his sword out.
Yeah, well, he also put the tip down, which is why he was given away by the other guy. If he had the tip up, he wouldn't have got caught by the other guy.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to do learned. Audio description for this movie so that it can
apparently,
be...
Apparently, at least for the fight scenes.
Yeah, right? I think so. So you guys didn't like the fight scenes then? You thought they were...
It's not that I didn't like them. It's just that they had a very similar tempo and choreography.
Okay, so like compared to the Princess Bride scene where they have that wonderful sword work, it's nothing like that.
No, you can't compare the two, I'm sorry. Okay. I mean, and don't get me wrong, I do like Kevin Sorbo and the fantasy stuff that he does, but I've never felt, even in Hercules and Legendary Journeys, that that he has the grace to be a really decent stage combatant.
He does have that tall lankiness to him, but what I would most compare the fighting to would be a little more serious than his Hercules fights.
Yeah, it seemed very TV. It seemed very, you know, safely choreographed and kind of canned.
Yeah, so yeah. They should have choreographed it better than I don't know if that's. See, I will not blame Kevin Sorbo for anything because I think.
Oh no, certainly not.
He's so
he's
sweet.
A swell guy.
He is swell. I met him and I he's so.
Yeah, Ron was there with us when we met him.
Oh, you were standing there. I forgot.
No, yes.
Yeah. You know, I can't remember if I felt his muscles or not.
No,
I didn't.
I don't think that.
He's not as ripped then. Wasn't as ripped then as he was back for the
Hercules.
Cult. Yeah.
Yeah, but one thing that actually does show through in the movie is, if I may, Kevin Sorbo he's having fun the whole movie. You can just look at it and see the actor himself is having fun doing that part.
I thought
he
was.
But he's also not bringing enough of Cole to it to make it you know, a decent character.
Yeah, that's why it should be Hercules.
The funny thing about this is that it has all the elements of a decent fantasy film.
I totally agree.
You know?
But I'm going to disagree on the soundtrack.
Oh no. My God, that music!
You can't disagree on the soundtrack! You can't disagree on the soundtrack because you have the intro, then you have that giant flaming moment where suddenly this blazing metal guitar comes in. So clearly somebody was ruling by their axe.
The driving beat, go, go, go!
Oh, I hated that. I'm like, no, this is completely wrong.
There you go, I got some soundtrack for you. Check this out. Check this baby out.
No.
You can't have her.
So there's that.
By the sax, I rule.
So that was pretty much the soundtrack through the whole thing.
Did you guys like that music? Because it didn't belong.
It's hilarious. Yes,
yeah,
and
yeah.
It's funny because it doesn't belong.
And the thing is, it doesn't belong in 1997 either. It belongs solidly in 1987.
Yes. Yeah, there. I was going to say six, but yeah.
I can see that.
But I can definitely see, like, the meeting going on in the boardroom where the guys are sitting there going, oh, you know what we should do? We should have in the music, we should have this blazing heavy metal guitar playing because they call that an axe, and Cole rules by his axe. And everybody's
whoa.
Go with that.
Yeah, maybe if they were, like, smoking marijuana at the time. I mean,
so the fantasy movies from the mid-90s?
What's
that? It wasn't exactly the golden age of fantasy movies.
You know, this is the first movie from the 90s that we've done, and there's probably a reason for that.
Yes, there's a very good reason for that.
Well, what were they going for, though? Were they going for seriousness, or were they going for campiness, or were they going for serious campiness?
I think they were going for getting the teenagers fired up for these fight scenes.
I think so, too. This is where I think there's a level of conflict. I think some of the actors were trying to bring a certain gravitas to it, and I think some of the actors were like Kevin Sorbo, like just having fun with it. Hmm. And so you get this weird blend of camp and seriousness working its way through, like the priest who brings back, why can't I remember her name? I'm drawing a blank.
Zaretta?
Tia Carrera's character.
Oh, Akavasha.
Akavasha. When he brings back Akavasha, she heals him, and then he goes, then she slowly burns him again.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because the guy sells every time he's burnt, you know? I mean, he sells it.
Yeah, I agree. He's like the Iago of this picture. He's like the parrot that gets beat up on.
Oh, my gosh, I'm vaulting.
And the guy who's the lawgiver and the second to the king, whose name is curiously Two.
okay, I didn't also notice that.
He also brings a level of gravitas to it as well, and it's just it's very
well. He's like a eunuch in everything he plays.
Well, pretty much. I mean, he's a you know a threatless man child.
Well, right. Maybe the director said you play it seriously. You are a clown. You are,
I don't think the director actually took the reins on
this. I'm feeling that's probably the case as well.
I have no idea.
So this director, I looked up his CV. He's done a lot of TV. He did a lot of episodes. He did 9 episodes of Miami Vice.
Wow.
So this is a guy who is really into, you know, style over substance. He wants the music to, you know, take over the scene and get you fired up.
You know, that explains a lot to me. Because the way you guys are talking about it, it sounds like it was more of a TV
it really
episode
felt like it.
Oh, yeah.
than
really
a movie. That's... And it's completely different acting when you're doing TV than when you're doing a movie. And a lot of people have trouble with the switch from,
but,
you know.
But I think that's one of the reasons why they went with Sorbo. And also, like Ron is saying, it was Hercules the Conqueror. It wasn't called the Conqueror.
Yeah.
You know, it was a character people were familiar with and comfortable with.
So I told you I liked the love scenes between him and, you know, Kevin Sorbo and Lombard.
Lombard.
Because I said the love scenes, I didn't say the.
I think each of them is a scene. I don't think there's scenes.
The one on the boat and the one in the palace
Where she turns him down and then he turns her down.
Yeah,
and then
she turns him down.
Because
he says, "I'm going to sleep alone tonight," and then later,
and then she says it later on.
You know, and I smiled. You know, yeah, it's campy, but you know, I was still sitting on the couch enjoying it. I mean, I know we're doing a podcast and we're critiquing it, so of course we got to rip it apart. But you know, I still had fun. I was smiling, and like you said, it's so bad it makes you laugh.
Yes.
I was laughing, and especially I like the pirate guy.
Firestein.
I mean, when he asked him to come. I'm sorry, I'm already laughing.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I'm going to play it. Okay.
Okay.
Why don't you come with us?
Oh, Carl, you know I hate the smell of fish.
Get it?
Yeah, we get it.
We get it, Juba.
We know what you're saying. And I thought...
Or Harvey, thank you.
Pete, I think that illustrates your point of, you know, were they trying to be funny? Were they trying to be serious?
Harvey Firstick was blatantly supposed to be the comic relief of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
He's blatantly supposed to be the comic relief of this movie.
Yeah. So I thought that fit. I liked that part.
It's lost in the fact that it's still a very funny movie in spite of him.
Oh, you didn't like him either?
Oh no, I liked him fine. I just felt like the stuff he brought was wasted because there wasn't enough seriousness on the part of everybody else to make the comic relief.
And I think there were some funny lines. There were some things that should have been funny lines that they didn't really land very well because it was kind of lost in these other scenes. Like this line right here. This should have been a really funny line, okay?
Your bride is over 3,000 years old.
She said she was 19.
That should have been a really funny line.
It's also
what are you doing? I can't take a man's life. Now you tell me.
I smile there.
Did you guys catch the Tia Carrera line from Darth Vader?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. This right here.
Find him, kill him, and then we'll rule together.
No, that was not part of our pact.
I have altered our pact. Pray I do not alter it further.
Ripper!
Yeah. Are they allowed to do that? Can you actually
know? This is not an exact quote, that's why.
I thought it was
because she says
close.
I have altered our pact, and Darth Vader says I've altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it further.
Oh wow, one word?
No, two words.
So
there should have been some really. Was it the delivery? Was it the framing of the lines? So a lot of them didn't really have the comedic impact that I thought they were intended to have.
And I think it was the delivery. I think the problem is you've got somebody, I don't know, Thomas Ian Griffith, I get why he would want to be in a movie like this.
Okay, who did he play, Pete? Just so I know who you're talking about.
He was Talagaro. He was Captain Mullet himself, or General Mullet himself. The guy who tells Cull that this is a nobleman's weapon, and then hands him a flaming sword.
Okay.
And it's like, so a nobleman's weapon is gonorrhea, is what you're telling me. That's what you're saying.
Oh my God. It burns. The evil dude. Okay.
But he's one of the three conspirators. He's one of the Talagaro's one of the ones in line for the kingship.
For the kingship, yeah.
He's number two.
No, two is two.
Yes, two is two, but he's the second.
I think
line.
He's three. Or I don't know. I'm confused.
No, but that's the thing is that the king died without saying which, besides the ones he slaughtered, which of the surviving ones would take his crown.
Okay, that whole plot point with the king just like killing people, I was really what the heck is going on?
They just told the actor it wasn't a Conan movie.
Oh, okay. Well then. Yeah.
He just started
whacking people. Okay.
So we had to like back over it and turn the subtitles
he was
on. To,
so
what he was
incomprehensible.
What have you done, Bonya?
My eldest challenged me for the throne.
What?
Well, I'll spare all my children any future disappointment.
What?
What?
Just challenged me for the throne. You see, he's in The Running Man.
Okay.
He's the guard who Richard Dawson disses. And at one point, when Arnie has shown up and Richard Dawson wants Sven to hit him, he goes, I have to go score some steroids.
After what?
I have to go score some steroids.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you see, without there having Arnie in there, his accent shows the thickest.
Exactly.
That's true.
The thing I liked about that whole scene the best there was that, okay, these guys are riding horses there, and they get there, and then Kevin Sorbo appears... Kills the king, and then he's the king.
Right.
Yeah. Well, he pushes his way through the crowd first.
But he was on foot.
Yeah.
That just shows you that Atlanteans are great runners.
He's really that cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't get that part, and he was a mumbler. And I just, you know, I was just sitting there. I just wanted to say that line from Willy Wonka, like, mumbler. I couldn't understand him.
There is a moment... when he grabs onto the crown after it's been in the fire, and you can hear his right. flesh crackle.
Ooh. Okay,
but he hands it to Cull, and Cull doesn't seem affected at all. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah. No, I didn't. Kevin Sorbo looked at it and went, huh.
Huh.
Like, am I supposed to do something here?
What does one do with one of these pieces of metal?
I did not know that.
Is that like a symbolic moment in the movie that we were supposed to know?
I think it is. It's bad continuity.
Okay. I didn't. I mean, maybe it's because I couldn't see it. Chris, did you understand that moment?
I was. So I didn't, or I might have at the time, but any other continuity mistakes or flaws in the film were probably overshadowed later on by Tia Carrere's wig.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
wow. and her scleral cells there.
Well, Chris was trying to describe to me that she's a beautiful, beautiful woman, and he said, but she's got this god-awful red wig on, and he's like, Sharon, just be happy you can't see it, because
so picture the prettiest girl in the world in a Raggedy Ann wig.
Yeah, pretty much close.
Yeah. That's what you get.
I just don't know why they would do that.
That was the height of her career, too, didn't it?
That was legit, because after that she did, like, Relic Hunter, I think.
Yeah, she was in a regular series for a while after this. But this didn't do her any favors,
well,
I'm sure.
It was a sexy part, but why did they put her in an ugly red wig? I mean,
she
didn't need to.
She's supposed to be the resurrected Queen of Acheron, and the royal family of Acheron had... Congress with demons, and so they were all supposed to be redheads.
How do you know these things, Pete?
I read an awful lot of Robert E. Howard. As a matter of fact, I can tell you why King Borna was going crazy.
Okay.
Because in the story, the Conan story, he's being poisoned by his kids.
Because they want to steal the throne. So is that why he was killing them?
And that's why he starts killing them, is because he's been driven mad by lead poisoning.
Okay, but why couldn't they tell us some of this stuff?
Because
it would make so much more sense.
Because look who the director is, and then look who wrote the screenplay. The thing that hurts me the worst, and I'm not sure I'm going to get this person's name right, but L. Sprague de Camp,
who was
R.P. Howard's heir apparent, who was one of those people who wrote future Conan stories based on the notes that Howard left behind, was a consultant on this film.
Okay.
And it's just like, why would you even have your name attached to this? I don't get that. You know? You might as well be Robert E. Howard Jr., you know?
So let me just say, without having the information that you have, Pete, I was confused. I'm like, so the king is crazy. Okay, because he's killing. I didn't know. Why do these people even want him as their king if he's, like, totally crazy in the head? And it just seemed, I don't know, just so arbitrary. Like, okay, now Cole is king. Why is Cole king?
Because that's how the law works.
Okay,
in the story, because Conan's the one who strikes the killing blow, Orna hands him the crown and says, "You're the only one strong enough to rule."
All right. Okay.
And that's what happens in the original story. So basically, they were trying to do that with Kull as well. They were trying to show that because he's the one who delivers the killing stroke, Borna considers him the strongest one.
Yeah. That's also why at the end, he says, "Buy my axe. I rule this."
Yeah, buy my axe. Right. He does say that at the end. And then so that didn't make sense to me. And then to follow up with that, so what? Kull was like king for what? 2 days? And then
it was at least a week.
Okay, at least a week. And then the woman
it just felt like
the woman
watching
he marries, you know, basically says, you know, like, we're definitely gonna get the I don't know if I can say this on our podcast, but she says whore, and she says that. And that murdered our beloved king. It's like, how could he be beloved? He's been
killed. Yeah, that reminds me. So she stops after the sex thing, which she obviously enjoyed, you know, kind of checks him out. Then hawks Thai food into his mouth and kills him?
That was a flaming hot sauce.
Oh, right.
See, that's what I'm saying. So, it's clearly a red curry.
These guys.
Right. Well, he was. So she changed her plan midway because he was just that good in bed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it must have been a really great sex scene because I pictured it really nice. Not nice, but.
I want you.
It was one of the best wooden sex scenes I've ever seen.
I was going to kill you. But after last night.
What? After last night, what? I don't understand.
But after last night, we got to see the size of your axe and why it rules.
Whoa.
But I just want to know, because what I was picturing for that sex scene was that they must have showed a lot of skin and body parts.
There was buttocks and there was side, but there wasn't a whole lot of other stuff.
I mean,
Sharon, what the sex scene looked like was they tied a 2x4 one of Tia Carrera's legs and put a sheet over it and then had Kevin and Tia Carrera roll around in the bed in a kind of a blurry scene for a while.
And kiss and make mooming noise.
That is not what I pictured at all. So maybe the thing to do is, you know, close your eyes during this movie and it will make it better. Because
there you go.
Well, I gotta say I agree with you on that. There were a lot of places where it looked like they wanted to make this an R-rated movie, but then they also wanted to make it a made-for-TV movie.
Don't you think, like, what I was picturing in my head, don't you think if it was a hot sex scene, it would have made it better if they were nude and if they were showing? Don't you think that would have improved it?
I agree.
Not just because you're men, but because it would have, if it was done artistically, it would have been good. Because what I pictured in my brain was definitely hot sex that was done artistically. So,
guys,
you know.
You can show me what you were picturing later
on. Okay, we'll go through that later.
But, you know, I know, didn't Karina Lombard get naked in The Firm?
Yes.
I can't
she
remember.
She got naked in White Sargasso Sea also.
Okay, so it wasn't like the cast was above doing that sort
of
thing.
Well, no, because you get that great moment at the end where while they're trying to get the breath of Valka, she suddenly rips off her top and kneels in supplication in front of Valka.
No, no. Actually, that scene right there, that scene was actually done pretty well.
Thanks,
with a bare suggestion of side boob.
But I really, it's funny because I had to watch that scene twice because I realized why, considering for the rest of the movie she leaves her top on, she suddenly whips the top off in front of Valka. It's because the card has the maiden bare-chested.
Yeah.
So she appears bare-chested in front of Valka.
So Valka could see if it was a girl or not. That's really
exactly. Valka's like, yeah, that's not bad.
No, but I thought that scene was good because it had that force field there where, you know, if the men enter, they froze instantly.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there was the big plot hook of how Kevin Sorbo got out of there, but okay.
Mm. Well, we figure that he's, you know, that Valka likes him.
Yeah, okay, I can see that.
Well, that Valka thing wasn't needed anymore, so he broke through the wall.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, plus Valka was crying, so clearly he made Valka cry.
Right. And at church, they told him that only happens when he masturbates.
Sally, my son and I were watching that, and he goes, "Oh, he made Valka cry."
Well, I can agree that I think Karina Lombard sold the sex scenes there by how many times she repeated, "Should I take my clothes off now? Should I take my clothes off now?" In the beginning of the movie.
What about now? Right. How about now? Now?
Now? How about now? Can I do it now?
I don't know. I liked her parts because I think she only said it once, and you know she said, you know, I'll do it, but I won't.
Yeah, here. This is what she said.
I'll do it, but I won't like it.
I'll do my best to satisfy you in the bedchamber now, but do not mistake compliance for enthusiasm.
Enthusiasm. Yeah.
What? Yeah. What accent is that?
I don't know, but it's gorgeous.
But I want it.
It sounds Spaniard.
It's gorgeous.
Maybe.
And it sounds Spaniard.
It is.
That's why. I love her. I just do. So you cannot say anything bad about her.
See Wide Sargasso Sea. You will adore it, and you will love me for recommending it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's proficient in English, Spanish, Italian, and German, so she probably slammed them all together there.
See, and she,
yeah, I'm looking at her page here. And she was in that Bruce Willis Yojimbo movie.
Yep. Last Man Standing.
Yeah, Last Man Standing. There it is.
I would love her to read a kindergarten book for me in my class.
I would love for her and Penelope Cruz to get into a shouting match. And they don't actually have to resolve anything. I just get to sit there and watch.
Oh, wow.
Sounds good.
But to me, she just has a beautiful voice. Is she also a beautiful actress as well?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yes, okay.
So in Last Man Standing, she was like the motivation for him doing anything.
Right.
So that movie was pretty good, and the best thing about that was David Patrick Kelly.
Yes.
And if we can find a fantasy movie that he's in, I want to do that, because he's made his entire career over being like the lieutenant that you have to go through to get to the boss.
Or the Weasley guy.
Yeah.
He's in Ford Fairlane as this incredibly Weasley guy.
Yeah.
Oh, David.
So, Pete, did you like the stuff with the Kevin Sorbo hiding underneath the animal and the whole thing is like...
Well, again, it was wah-wah-wah, you know. It was just one of those things where... I don't know. There was a movie called Ready to Wear. It was also called Prêt-à-Porter.
Okay.
There was this dog poop motif through it. And it wasn't funny.
Okay.
Was a little clever to begin with, but it was never funny. And this was, that's okay. You know, it's uh-huh. But
well,
don't,
it kind of tells you what the level of the movie
pretty
is.
Pretty much, yeah. It really gauges the level of audience they were aiming for.
Like, where are we going to go with this? Oh, there?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
And that's where we'll stay.
Right.
Okay, so you could have done without the pee parts, and we could have ramped up the sex. So what else could we have, I mean, like,
have everybody on the same page acting wise.
Oh, you mean what would save this?
Yeah,
thing?
Yeah, exactly.
That is really hard.
Guy to adapt it, because the guy who adapted it wrote Dragonheart and Dragonheart 2.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Well, we got to give a little shout out to the Filipino martial arts that Lightfoot did there.
True.
In the temple.
Yep.
Was that something you recognized?
Yeah, that was some Redonda from Modern Arnis or similar. Yeah. And he used that as unarmed, I'm not going to kill people combat.
Oh, you know what? He's David Patrick Kelly?
Yeah.
Is in the movie Dreamscape. I don't know if we're going to count that as a...
Oh, we have to do that. Wait, but it's kind of science fiction.
I know. That's.
Oh, God damn it. We had this conversation.
Balls. Okay, so anyway. Let us
what
continue.
Did you say? It's. Did you say it's nonfiction?
Oh, you know what? He's in The Crow. That's got to be fantasy.
I guess we'll talk about
okay.
it. He gets blown up bad in that movie.
He gets blown up real good in that movie. He has one of my favorite lines where he goes, no, this can't be happening. This is the really real world.
Right.
But sorry. I didn't mean to derail there, but yeah, I think we said all we could about Cole, quite frankly.
So, well, hey, it's if you get sidetracked talking or about another movie, that means that the movie you watched wasn't that great. And I think we already knew
No, we knew that.
Oh, yeah.
But I also have a place in my heart for this because it's so bad. It's one of those ones that I kind of enjoy. A friend of mine used to call these a PIX movie. It's a movie that you watch because it's on TV.
Okay.
Like WPIX out in New York used to show on the afternoons and Saturdays and Sundays. So usually while you were like recovering from the hangover and cleaning the house, you'd turn that on and you'd have that in the background.
Mm.
And you can pick on it mercilessly. There's just so much MST3K you can do to this movie. My son.
Oh, that would make it better. I think that would help.
So it's definitely a group effort kind of thing to enjoy it. But
we should do that. We should do a riff tracks to this.
Yeah, we could.
I would do that.
You would do that? Okay.
Okay. I'm on board with
this. So the thing about this one was that it was so obvious that it was written by a man, but it also seemed like it was written by an adolescent.
No.
What's that?
That it was soft enough for a woman?
No, that it was written by an adolescent man.
Well, when we review Dragonheart, we can see exactly how that plays out.
But on the other hand...
I mean, there was this fantasy.
Oh yeah, having any woman.
War is harem, Your Majesty.
This way.
And now yours.
Like
wasn't this produced by Rafaela De Laurentiis though?
Not a big shock. The De Laurentiises have had their fingers in many B-rated fantasy films.
Can somebody look it up?
I did.
Oh.
So you're speaking authoritatively.
Yeah.
So it's not a question.
You weren't actually asking a question. You were being rhetorical.
Oh, there's my dry cleaning.
There it is.
There you go.
I was chafing a little bit here. You know how it is.
At the bit.
Yeah. So, music so 80s is my first note in this.
Indeed.
Also, CinemaSins would ding this for narration.
Oh, at the beginning?
Yep.
Yeah. Here, Kevin, you just got out of the bathroom. Read this.
Oh my God.
Right.
Thanks.
You guys are wow.
Yeah. And a woman is the cause, so all women are one woman.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And then of course, very much a guy not really thinking it out.
No. Which is too bad because I liked the adaptations he did for DOA and one of the other ones.
Not sure which one you're talking about.
This was number 9 at the box office when it released itself on its opening weekend.
Wow.
Really?
Really? Because I tell you why. Because Kevin Sorbo is hot!
Well, he was also, front page news then.
Yeah, he was popular. Charles Edward Pogue, the guy who wrote the screenplay.
Right, okay.
Also adapted DOA and The Fly. So I liked a couple of his prior adaptations, but then you get up to Dragonheart and Call the Conqueror, and it's like, what happened?
Right.
So.
Well, he's like, Formula's your friend, going back to, the TV miniseries of Hercules was written by him 10 years after Call the Conqueror.
Yeah. Sigh.
Yeah, pretty much sigh. I mean, I can't say I hated every minute of this film, but it wasn't a lot of fun to watch. I mean, I could have done this with something else, or with this on in the background while doing something
exactly,
else.
Exactly, and that's why I'm saying it's a PIX film.
Christopher, what was your favorite scene? Did you have a favorite scene?
Was your favorite scene the sex scene?
Well, in my own brain.
Right. So that's the thing. It's like
the
scenes that were in our brains coming into this movie were better than what they put on the screen. I think that it goes for all of us.
I think my favorite scene is when he throws his axe away and says, this is for chopping wood. This is what a nobleman uses, and he hands him a flaming sword. Really, so you just I'm out to oil up and fire up to go to battle?
I've decided what my favorite scene is. It was that scene where the eunuch was telling him the law, and we both swore up and down that he was about to break into song.
Yeah.
I like when he was in the temple chasing there, and he jumped down from the second floor and goes, oof.
Oh, ow. I fell on my keys.
Maybe it really hurt.
He should have said he fell on his keys. That would have made it a better movie.
I fell on my sensor.
All right. So are we ready to rate it then?
We are.
I'm ready. Okay. Sharon.
No, don't make me go first. Somebody else go first.
Okay, Ron.
Well,
I'll do you next.
Whoa.
I'll kill you last.
Wait a minute.
All right, Pete.
Yes.
On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Cull the Conqueror?
I'm going to give it 2 gold and 1 electrum, and the 1 electrum is because you can MST3K the hell out of it.
Awesome.
Yes.
All right. Ron, on a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Cull?
Well, seeing as I had to watch Cull 4 times because I kept falling asleep, I will give it 1 gold piece just for cinematic humor.
Hey, that's awesome. That's 2.5 silver per time you fell asleep. You can't get that kind of rates at an inn.
But I often don't nap in the afternoon, so hey.
Okay. Sharon.
No, go before me.
Okay.
Go before me.
Chris.
What would you rate this movie?
On a scale from 1 to 10 1 to 5 gold pieces, what would you rate this movie?
1 to 5.
I would give Cull the Conqueror 1 gold and 5 silver.
That's an electrum.
But I want to make it go through the trouble of counting out all 5.
Because John Nicolello earned it.
Yes. All right, Sharon. On a scale of 1 to 5 gold pieces, how do you rate Cull the Conqueror?
I'm going to give this movie 3 gold pieces. And let me tell you why. All right?
Please, I know.
Is this for each time she said, let me take my clothes off?
If you're getting 3 gold for the weight of Kevin Sorbo,
yes.
I have lost respect for you.
Seriously, like.
Oh my God!
If
you would have given it 3 gold for the weight of Thomas Ian Griffith's mullet, then I would have been appreciating it. But no.
Here's
Karina. I mean,
sure.
I have to.
Yeah.
I just love her voice. The reason why I gave it 3 is because I did not fall asleep, and it was.
Sorry.
So there have been some movies that I have actually fallen asleep, and Chris knows because...
Didn't we have to turn this off, though, and go do stuff?
And no. You didn't miss anything.
No, we watched...
Right.
No, we had to keep rewinding the one part where the guy was mumbling.
Right.
Because I accepted that it was a B movie, but for a B movie, I still think 3. So 3 is an average, you know? It was average for, you know, what it was.
I'm going to go back through your catalog and movies and find out what else you gave 3 stars to. Just to see if you really think it was as good as those.
I'm curious as well. Ouch.
No, this is what I was getting at. This line right here is where Harvey gets his money for me.
But 2 women, 10 women.
No women.
No women. Cow, have you got a problem?
I just love it.
Have you got a problem?
Harvey's the one who can deliver his lines and actually make them land.
Yes, exactly, because he is a comedic actor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was fine.
He's got chops, you know?
So does he always have that voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Watch a movie called Torch Song Trilogy. It's really...
Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
So, who picks the next movie?
I believe I picked the next movie.
You picked the next movie.
No, Sharon, I'm sorry. You picked the next movie. Sharon, what are we doing next?
gore.
I'm just looking at that. We're never going near that.
We have to!
Oh, Sharon,
yes.
Please tell us that you have a better choice than what Pete just suggested.
I don't know if you guys will think so, but I really want to do The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Because it's fantasy.
It is. I guarantee.
If that's the case, I get to choose the crow next.
Why don't you just combine them both?
The crow and Oz.
The crow is the flying monkeys.
Okay. Wizard of Oz it is.
Is that okay? Excellent.
Well, yeah. Hey, it's your choice.
It's your call.
Excellent.
All right.
Well, and I've read the book, and you've read the book, and
I have read nine of the books.
I've read the book, and I live next to the town where the book was written.
Oh, really?
Hey, yeah, I do too.
Chittenango, New York.
Oh, okay. Yeah, really? I actually started reading the book series, and I read nine of them.
Yes, Chittenango, New York actually has a yellow brick road through downtown.
How neat is that? That's like really cool.
Yeah, and they have Ozfest every year.
Ooh, I want to go.
Does Ozzy Osbourne come out to it?
No, not that Oz, not double Z, single Z.
Oh my gosh! So we want people to rate this movie.
Yeah,
so
we want people to go to the website and give us your opinion of Cull.
Please,
Ron. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to join you, and if you want me back, I'll happily come back.
Oh, we're happy to have you back.
Thank you, Ron.
I'm happy to have you anytime, Ron. I mean, back anytime.
Is that when my clothes are late?
Oh, my God.
So if you enjoy Dragon Reel, go to the iTunes store and give us a review. It'll help our rankings. And if you have friends, I hope you do, share the podcast with them and get them to write reviews. And if you have any requests or want to let us know about anything or think we're absolutely barking mad about our opinions, you can write us at dragonreelpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Pete, how can people find us on the webs?
They can find us at Facebook.com/DragonRail.
Okay.
You can find us at Twitter @DragonRail.
Excellent.
And they can also, I believe you already said our website, so.
I didn't.
Oh, didn't you? No. So you can find us at DragonRail.com.
Excellent. You can also find us on Stitcher, which I keep forgetting to say.
But you remembered this time, so I bravo.
Did. Yes.
And
if Kevin Sorbo listens to this podcast, I think he should appreciate that I totally love him.
Phrasing. And if we talked up, right? And if we talked up Cull so much you want to go buy it, we'll have a link on the on our website where you can go to Amazon and get it. And if you go to Amazon from our website, from any of the links on our website and buy anything on Amazon, it'll kick a few pennies our way. It'll help us keep the podcast up and running. So thanks for that. Anyone else got anything else to add?
No,
The movie actually does not release until the 12th of April.
Which movie?
Cull.
But on what venue?
On digital media. You can get it like DVDs and Blu-rays and such. But
oh, wow. I didn't even know it was going digital. We should have kicked this one a month down the line. Then I wouldn't have had to order the thing.
Well, I ordered it for $4, so.
That's true. So did I.
But worth every penny.
It's cool because if you want it for your fantasy collection, I mean,
yeah.
I think
what's
if you're
the
serious,
dollar to gold piece ratio, it might owe us.
But if you're serious about fantasy movies and collecting fantasy movies, you know, through the decades, I think it's a good one to have in your collection.
It's definitely a conversation piece.
That's for sure.
After all, we just had an hour-long conversation about it.
Absolutely.
So join us next time when we talk about The Wizard of Oz, and until then, have fun storming the castle. Keep your vertical up.